town you never heard of. Hey everybody, welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
That's right, podcast for the people, by the people.
There it is.
Do you usually say for the people first, or do you say by the people first?
I think I say for the people, by the people.
Yeah, he wouldn't say by the people, for the people.
I thought he did.
No. It would work either way, I guess.
Maybe it would work either way.
I mean, we're always talking about drinks. Maybe it's that new drink that you have there.
What are you drinking?
No, me? You. Yeah, this is by water.
Yeah, this was,
just sounded funny the way you said
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. It's B-A-I. Is that not how we say that?
I don't know how you say it. It looks like it.
Bay?
It's probably an Asian word.
Bay water?
Yeah.
Bay? Okay. I'd say bay. You said like bai. That's what I picked up.
B-A-I.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Have you guys ever heard of this app?
Andy, you need to get it.
I'll show you it here. It's right down here on the bottom. It's got that little, looks like a carrot.
Okay.
It's called Yuka.
Yuka.
I think that's what it's called. That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. It's spelled like, again,
can't Ashley would love
pronounce
this.
It. So you take this, you open this thing up, you go to like this scan mode.
Okay.
And you can scan.
Scan your drink.
Well, I could scan this one, I guess. Yeah. So you do this, you get it in the picture, and then it pops up.
Ratings.
Oh, wait. I don't have a good connection back here, apparently.
Oh, well. Oops.
But it tells you if it's healthy or
yes.
not.
Rural internet.
Yeah.
So it says what it is. It gives it a 63 out of 100. And then you go in here and it tells you all the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
This one, they don't like.
So we were getting vitamin water.
There's one deal that says
that's way too
limited.
Sugary.
Will you guys shut up? I'm talking. There's one deal here that says limited risk acacia gum texturizing agent. Everything else in here, they love it. So whatever. So anyway, as Morgan said, I scanned my vitamin water, which I love, and my kid really loves. They gave it a 9 out of 100.
So
ew.
That's not great.
And then the thing, when you go down here, it'll give you recommendations of what's better.
Uh-huh.
And so that was this stuff. So just got it this week. So that's what this is all about.
I mean, we're not taking it for Bible, but it is good. Mm-hmm. Like, there were a few things, and I was like, especially because our middle daughter is gluten-free. She has to be. And I have a couple different pastas. One was absolutely horrible. Like, I can't remember what it said. And the other one was like, boom, winner, winner. And she didn't really care on the two. And I'm like, oh, score. Well, now I know what, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So anyways, we just kind
of. What it's come down to on most of the things that I've scanned is like, you hear about all these like processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those ingredients.
Yeah.
It's the food coloring. It's the.
The dyes,
texturizing agent. It's the, you know, whatever. Like, on the gluten-free, like, people would, you know, you buy a box of gluten-free spaghetti and you're like, oh shit, this stuff is so healthy, you know, whatever. On that particular one, it had something, some kind of synthetic added to it to make it feel like regular pasta.
Oh,
it's like the mouth feel was like regular pasta, but it's gluten-free. So you have that additive, you know. It's just weird.
You get a lot of that with like sushi and stuff where it's not that bright orange, you know. So they'll dye it up. But I had an app like that a couple of years ago, and same scenario. You'd scan it, and it was for everything like hair products, foods, drinks. And I got to looking at it, and I noticed like all the products that are pushing me towards was being sponsored by that app.
I thought the same thing.
It was a total freaking, it was a funnel, so I deleted it.
So is that the same with this one?
This one specifically states that they don't have any sponsors, they don't take any money from any of these companies, so.
But who knows?
Yeah, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? You got, like anything else, you got to use your own judgment in the end, but it's kind of a tool to help you,
it's just
know,
a tool.
Look at some stuff.
Yeah, but, what was it called?
Yuka, Y-U-K-A.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about it on the Sean Ryan Show. That's one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to, and he was talking about it.
Yeah. Right on.
Anyway, getting all healthy and shit.
hey, our guest today has a new health story, too.
Oh.
Really? So who do we have with us today, Andy?
We have the one, the only, Andy Tease.
There you go. Double Andy in the studio today.
Andy squared, now, that's right.
Andy's a good old buddy of mine from Peru State College.
Yep.
They had the infamous house, the Sterling House, And I mean, those were some good times.
Everybody had one of those, didn't they? Like, when I was in college, we had, it was called the Rugby House.
Okay, yeah.
So it was like a frat house?
No.
Oh.
Ours, okay. A little more wild.
It was way more wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was fun. And then I lived in a house like, what, two houses up from there?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It was,
so and, you just stumbled back and forth?
Stumbled. Yeah. And it was kind of tough because mine was uphill a little bit. So
oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
It was downhill on the way there, but uphill on the way back, which was terrible. but, you know, you guys are from Sterling, Nebraska, and it was all Sterling guys except for maybe Nick Johnson, who's also from a small town.
Yep. Lions.
Yeah, Lions. And I was from a small town, so we kind of hit it off and got along. And yeah, you guys were definitely the host of the party house for a good 2 years running there.
Started in the dorms, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, had to be careful there.
Did you guys play football together?
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't play football.
No.
He did.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I knew Andy did. I just figured you might have played. No? Mm-hmm.
No, I partied way too much for that.
Yeah. So... And I partied just the right amount. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not while in season, but out of season. Oh, okay. So maybe in season.
I wouldn't say that.
But oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So.
So what's your hell story here, Andy? What were you alluding
really
to?
Not much of a hell story.
I think it is.
All right.
All right. Let's hear it.
Well, I guess I was in the Army, because, Peru didn't work out so well. I guess I switched my major a couple times and got my general studies done. I didn't know what to do, and 9/11 was going on, so I joined, or not 9/11, but the invasion was going on, so joined the Army. Did that for 8 years or whatever. The second deployment, one of my squad leader, his name's Hernandez. He's down in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a rough and tough Mexican dude. He's pretty funny, but... he started reaching out to me, I don't know, a couple years ago, probably, as like a, what do you call it? Like accountability buddy, I guess.
Accountability
buddy. For working out and stuff.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
And so he texts me every day, "You doing PT, bro?" You know, stuff like that. And, he was telling me here, I don't know, like a month ago that he started this carnivore diet, and he said, "I've never felt better, and I'm losing weight and this and that." And so I decided to give it a try, and I feel the same way. I feel great.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've been doing it a month?
No, like a week.
Okay. But yeah, but hey,
still
that's a
huge
start.
Difference, though.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're eating raw butter, just like by the?
No, just all meat and eggs.
Okay, I've just seen people take the butter and.
Yeah.
Well, so what he said he listened to our podcast with Christina Elder.
I did.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good.
What he's talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? Obviously, you're in the early stages and probably still learning about it. But what does it consist of? Like, are you doing three meals a day or a couple meals a day? Or
I do two boiled eggs for breakfast every day, and then around lunchtime I get hungry. I'll if we got some. I pickle fish. That's something I've been doing recently. I mean, this last year I started pickling fish. And so that's what I'll have for lunch. I'll just go to the fridge and get some fish out. And
nice.
Then supper last night, I had two hamburgers and an egg, fried egg on top of them.
Okay.
And, so I'm just trying to not eat carbs. That's it.
Like, but are you feeling full?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't feel miserable full like after you eat a bunch of bread or pasta,
mm-hmm.
which I'm a huge sucker for bread and pasta, so that's really hard. But that's the big thing. And then you wake up in the morning and you feel better and lighter and more,
more energy.
Yeah, yeah.
So dairy is not on that. Then.
I think so. I'm just starting this. I think that's okay. I drink a lot of milk.
Okay.
Cottage cheese. But pretty much everything else I'm trying to stay away from and I'm not going to do this forever. Like, I'm not committing to this forever. This is just, I want to get to a weight where I'm comfortable and I'm feeling good and then try to maintain it just by not eating like an asshole, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get that summer bod going and hit the lake.
Yeah.
But, okay. What's, do you drink alcohol?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another reason, because... I'm a beer guy.
Yep.
I love beer.
Yep.
Too much. I don't drink very, you know, like every day or anything.
Yeah.
Definitely not an alcoholic, but, you know, me and my buddies, for example, we're going ice fishing this weekend. It's a 4-day deal, Friday through Monday. I know I'm probably going to drink 60 beers.
Yeah. Right.
Probably going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, yeah, just trying to moderate in other places, I guess, to make up for it. So,
yeah, I think that's the key, is that moderation piece. Do you, so since you started this carnivore thing, have you drank alcohol at all since you started that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, just a few beers, but seemed to buzz quicker.
Does it? Yeah.
I would guess, right? You don't have those carbs to like soak it up or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say something about that.
Yeah, I suppose I've been doing it a week and a half now, so it's, I can put this closer.
There you go. Yeah, depending on how you want to sit.
Yeah, I suppose I've been doing this a week and a half is all, but, you know, last weekend we had a few beers and, you know, so.
You were good.
Yeah, they were delicious.
Yeah, I ran into your guys' state championship coach a couple weeks ago in Beatrice at the brewery.
Which one?
Moats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah. Where's he at now? Firth.
Yeah.
Norris. Yeah, he's at Norris. And he said a big reason he wanted to move from this previous stop was he wanted to get back towards the Sterling area and you guys. And,
yeah.
You can tell he had a lot of fun down there. And, he won a state championship, too. So he had some success. And And Norris is kind of it's a good school to go to if you want to.
He's having a lot of success there.
Yeah,
he's a good coach.
Yep, no doubt. So said hi, and we always talk about Sterling every time I run into him. So.
Nice. So, like, keeping with our theme of talking to the common folk, and especially a bunch of Nebraska people. We talk to a lot of Nebraska people. So having Andy here today, what do you want to get into? What do you want to?
Well, I kind of lost touch with Andy when you were in the service. So I don't know, you know, where you went, what you were in the Army.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How did that all come about? Because I can remember it was my freshman year of college when 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And it happened while I was in class.
Yep.
So I got out of class and got back to the dorms, and everybody was acting all weird and glued to TVs. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, and then a year later is when you guys all, you're right.
No.
What year? Oh, hang on a second. The
been 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The memory chip just glitched.
Looks like
it's still, it's still going, though, so I'll keep an eye on it. What year did you graduate high school?
2001.
2001? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when did you decide to enlist?
Yeah, like I said, basically we were in college and, you know, we literally partied like rock stars. I didn't go to class very much, but I wasn't into what I was, you know, there for, really. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I got the general studies done pretty much, and just sitting there on the couch one morning watching everything happen overseas, and I thought, you know what, like, I think I'm going to do that. Let's just do that. So I didn't say anything to anybody, my parents or anybody. I just went to the recruiter's office and signed up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A couple months later, I was in basic. And a couple months after that, I was in AIT. And then a couple months after that, I was in Iraq.
Okay.
So, I did a year and a half there. A year and a half deployment. I don't think I was in country that long, but... that was in 2004 when it was pretty nasty over there. We were stationed on a base in Mosul, which is up north. And at the time it was, the special forces had taken that base. And so we were kind of support for the special forces, you know, among other things, but I was in a transportation unit. So we hauled, you know, water, tires, food, from base to base. But then we also did a lot for the special forces, you know, weapons and explosives and stuff like that. And they would escort us then, you know, when we were hauling for them. But I was, thrown into the lead gun truck in the gun seat, after a couple months, cause, you know, people shooting at us and they're just trying to find somebody that would shoot back and, you know, stand up there, I guess. And first time it happened to me, I shot back and I stayed in there the rest of the deployment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we didn't lose anybody, thank God. My unit, I lost some friends from basic and AIT, but you know, nobody in my unit. So that was great, to come home with everybody.
Was that like one of those Humvees with like a turret on top of it, or?
Sometimes, yeah. Otherwise, it was, what the hell do they even call it? It's just like a big truck, like a deuce, not a deuce and a half. God, like they look like cab overs. I can't think of it. Uh-huh. You know, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so most of the time it was a Humvee, I'd say, but.
What do those, what kind of guns do those have mounted on them, do you know?
Well, 50 cals.
Are they 50?
I was most usually behind a 50 cal, but sometimes if all the 50 cals were checked out on mission, then I had a 240 Bravo, which is like a 30-06 fully mm-hmm. auto.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the gun I preferred. If I would have had a choice, that's what I wanted.
So could you just dismount and mount whatever caliber of gun on that device, or
no? Oh, it's okay. It's mounted in there good. Okay, you know?
So it would be a different truck if it had a different was a 240 versus a 50 or.
Well, no, no, they're just universal mounts, you know. So
okay.
every night after mission, you'd have to take the gun off.
And
put it in the armory.
Yep.
But, yep. So, yeah, no, it was. And then you had your M4 right next to you too.
Yep.
For close.
So did
stuff.
You, were you saying that, cause you kind of the story you were telling made me think like you had like the balls or whatever to go ahead and fire back, but maybe you guys had run into, you know, some folks in your, group
mm-hmm.
that maybe weren't as aggressive or weren't doing, is that what you experienced?
Yeah. And I don't want to insult anybody. That's not, you know, but basically, I was young and dumb enough. How do I explain it? So when we first started, just like a football team or anybody else, we had our linebackers, we had everybody else. What I'm saying is everybody had their own job
mm-hmm.
going into this deployment, like that you'd train for months, 3 months, whatever. We had our gun trucks. So in that deployment, we were our own gun truck or our own convoy security. So we had 20 semis to haul with flatbed trailers to haul all this stuff. And then we had I don't know if there was four gun trucks or whatever, one in the back, two in the middle, one in the front. You know, the one in the front was in charge of the route and paving the way. You know, that was back when car bombs were terrible and IEDs. Mm-hmm. So you're mm-hmm. looking, you know. And then ambushes, of course, that happened all the time, like mm-hmm. almost every day, mm-hmm. For a while there. But, so these people or these soldiers that, it was their job to be in the gun trucks. You know, if they're, you know, for, if the guy up front doesn't shoot back when we're getting ambushed,
yeah.
Then they don't stop firing at the right. whole convoy, you know.
Right.
So it was really important for the first guy to you know, fire back and sit in there and not duck down and just kind of hide and all that. So
what I was getting at, because I was curious to make sure I had that understanding correctly, and then what do you think it was about, like, maybe your upbringing or your childhood or whatever mm-hmm. that kind of gave you that not necessarily aggressiveness, but mentality of like, hey, you know, I need to do something here, or like, or the confidence to be able to do that.
Gosh, you know, you'd have to talk to my squad leader, honestly, about how he decided to throw me up there. But basically he, you know, during the game, he decided to make some changes and stuck me up there. And two of my best friends were the driver and the TC, and my driver, he was something else, Hanson. He was crazy. Like that was a perfect place for him. You know, one time we came back from mission, we had 11 different colors of paint on our on our Humvee,
just ramming stuff.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, there was no such thing as a roadblock. We just rammed through it. You know.
But what do you think about yourself personally when you were a kid, when you were growing up? Like what did you go through that gave you that confidence to be able to handle stuff like that?
Probably just. like the team mentality and, mm-hmm. you know.
Sports teams and sports, stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah. We were really good at, like when I was in high school, we were really good at sports. Mm-hmm. I played football. I wasn't, you know, outstanding or anything by any means, but I had some outstanding teammates. Mm-hmm. And basketball wasn't my sport, so I power lifted or whatever you want to call it during that season and just watched all my best friends, you know, kick ass, mm-hmm. you know, state tournaments. They didn't ever win one, but man, they were awesome.
Yeah, I got close.
Yep.
You got Ralph, Jake, shout out Greg.
Yeah, Ralph, Jake, Greg.
That was a rowdy house, I'll tell you what.
Yep, Josh Graffy, Andy Hyden. Yep.
It sounds like to me like the team camaraderie, but also just you being able to support even if it's not your thing, right? So like you weren't technically supposed to be up there, but when they tell you to sub in, you're like, hell yeah, I'm going, and I'm going to do the best I can do. Like, that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, part of it is you just do what you're told.
Okay.
And I was told to get up there, you know, and then we run into an ambush or whatever, and you know, I'm worried about all my friends behind me.
Exactly.
And if you don't shoot back, they just keep shooting, you know? Yeah. And so... Yeah. So I just, you know, just kept my finger on the trigger, I guess. And
mentally strong.
Yeah, and like I said, I was like 21 years old or something like that. So I was, you know, I was pretty fearless at that point.
Yeah.
And invincible. And so, that's.
Were you like an outdoorsman? Did you hunt?
Yeah.
That when you were a kid? Yeah.
Yep. Big outdoorsman. Yeah.
So you had plenty of experience with handling firearms and having the confidence to pull the trigger and do, you know, when the time is right and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Very, very comfortable with guns. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Couple of things there. Sterling reminded me a lot of Lynch. You know, town size, buddies, you know, sports teams, the whole nine yards. And I have another good friend of mine that was put in the exact same position as you.
Really?
He was the gunner. He was the top man on that Humvee. And I always told him, like, get the hell out of there. You know, but that was not his demeanor. I think a lot of that does come from we do what we're told, you know, we listen to our coaches, and just being from a small town, you care about your team, you care about your teammates, you know, you take accountability for them. So I think there's a lot of parallels there. Mm-hmm. And another thing, you're talking about your squad leader putting you in places, and you said Hanson, he's the perfect driver. That's another, go with that sports analogy. The great coaches don't always have the best pieces, but they know where to put them.
Yeah.
They know where to make them work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You probably saw that a lot with Kappas, your volleyball coach. Like, this doesn't look like a middle blocker, but I think she could make some hay there, and then it would click.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think there's a lot to be said for that, too, and figuring that out. And obviously, you guys were very fortunate not losing anybody, but that's also an ode to your squad leader figuring it out and putting everybody in the right place.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
So that's kind of how I digested that a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
So how long were you in the military? How long did you serve?
8 years, but I was a reservist, so I was active for probably half of that.
Okay.
You know, we did two deployments and, you know, lots of trainings and there's always a mob and a demob process, so that, you know, that's where the extra year comes from, probably. I'm just guessing. I'm guessing it was around 4 years, but, you know, it was one of those deals where you get back from the first deployment and they tell you, don't get too comfortable because we're going back.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of hopped around job to job and, you know, drove truck for a while and did this and that and went back again. And that's when my contract actually expired. It was when I was over there, right towards the end. And I was like, you know, I think I'm going to just start a family and be done with this. Because they were already saying, don't get too comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Going back again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was what, like 2010, 2012?
2010, right? No, 11. 11.
Yeah.
Yep. It was like January of 2011, I think, is when we got back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or maybe February. Actually, it was February. It was right before Valentine's Day. So, yeah.
And then you just decided to stay in your hometown?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just didn't.
You didn't move elsewhere?
Yeah. I mean, no, I did move back to Sterling, and then I used my GI Bill to go to school for ag. I got my agronomy degree. Before I was graduated, a good friend I knew, I did a lot of bartending and stuff, you know, in college and just in between deployments and stuff. And a good friend of mine owned a buffalo ranch or a bison ranch down in, well, he owned one in Nebraska, but he, he also owned one down in Missouri, and he was looking for a ranch manager. So I did my internship there and then got hired on, and I stayed there for a year. And I had a daughter that was less than 1 year old, and my wife at the time was, she was missing home. And so I stayed for 1 year, came back, got a job with the co-op, spent the next 8 years, I believe, as a agronomist.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice. Nice.
And yeah, and then I guess after 8 years or so, well, it's probably, I've been doing this for 7 years now, so I suppose that was like, you know, six, seven years in. One of my best friends is a broker for a real estate broker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember we went fishing one down at Milford one day, and mm-hmm. he was like, you know, you should think about getting your license and doing this. You talk to farmers every day, you know land, this and that. And so, you know, that's a good idea. I think I will. So I did. And then, you know, that side hobby turned into, you know, a pretty good income.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I guess I've always kind of been, wanted to be independent and not have bosses and stuff like that. And then my uncle gave me the opportunity. He's a seed dealer, and I was selling seed for the co-op, doing really well at it too. But he gave me the opportunity to work with him. And so I'm doing full-time real estate and, selling NC Plus seed with my uncle now.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for almost 4 years, I think. And, yeah. I love it. I don't want to go back. Like this is where I belong. I just got to make it work. It's a little stressful sometimes.
I was gonna say, yeah. You're busy probably.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's good to be busy,
yeah.
You know, but if you're not, then you get nervous.
Yeah,
and
true.
You get really good at budgeting because you might have a paycheck, you know, if you're lucky once a month, maybe it's four checks in 1 month and then 4 months without a check.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, we can definitely relate to that.
The life of an entrepreneur.
I had somebody ask me one time what the hardest part about being an entrepreneur was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it at the time because he interviewed me like early on when we started this. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, it's great. You know, everything.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of good. I don't know. There's not really anything that bad. And then he told me, and he was an entrepreneur, he said, it's cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that. And then eventually that started happening as we took mm-hmm. on more and more things, employees and, you know, assets and so on and so forth. And then I was like, he's right. And I've never forgot that.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest parts for sure.
Yeah, it is.
And you're in two different businesses, so I think there's a good balance there. You know, one's lagging, the other one can pick up. But they're kind of, maybe not the real estate side, but the seed side's pretty seasonal, isn't it? Like,
oh, yeah.
There's a real, real busy time, and then there's kind of a lag or lull.
Yeah, and you get paid once a year.
Yeah.
You know, you're commissioned. But so my goal has always been, since I started, I own 80 acres in a real nice acreage that I bought for my folks. I grew up there. And my goal has always been to, you know, pay the mortgages with the seed and then live off the real estate. Well, I'm about halfway there. I'm making enough on the seed where I can pay the mortgage for my land. And then the real estate, you know, takes care of everything else for now. So I'm doing well. It's just, it's scary sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
That's all.
Well, and so. Tell us about your real estate, because I remember early on, and that's kind of when I reconnected with you. Mm-hmm. I saw your name on a banner or something. I gave you a call. I was like, is this you for real? You know, you're trying to, you know, sell farms and stuff. And you were telling me, I don't like selling small houses or trailer homes. I want to focus on acreages. So I thought that was pretty interesting that early on you understood, I want to be in this game, but there's a lot of facets that I don't want to be part of.
Yeah, I really don't want to be too much of a part of selling houses. I will definitely do it for friends and stuff, you know, like I will help them. But that whole, you know, showing the same house 10 times really turned me off on that. So I have been focusing on land and trying to be just the land guy and be an expert at that. And I'm, you know, kind of with the hunting land and stuff. Right now, hunting land's really hot. And, you know, I got the experience and the, you know, I grew up doing it and loving it and all that. But I also have you know, as far as farm ground and all that stuff goes, I know mm-hmm. soil types. I know the business side of farming. So, you know, that helps a lot too. It's just, you know, that's what I prefer. That's where I want to be.
Right. And you have expertise there too.
Yeah.
I mean, typically your hunting ground also has a little bit of ag in there. So
sometimes
you can speak that language.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Mostly it's pastures, you know, mm-hmm. But you might have some good hunting ground with surrounded by, you know, crop ground too. So you got to figure out the value of each and kind of find a price and, you know.
With that, would you say you're not caught up like trying to package it up? You're just able to tell the story of what it is, good and bad? Because I feel like when you're selling a house, you kind of dress it up and you use power words or whatever they want to call them, you know. And you're not always thinking what's best for the buyer. You're just trying to move this freaking house. And I don't think you run into that as much with the property.
Well, yeah, I guess I wouldn't say that. Like all the agents that I work with that do houses and stuff, they truly do want what's best for their client. Mm-hmm. You know? That's why we're good at this, and that's why we get repeat customers and referrals. And this business is ran off of referrals. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's more for me wanting to stay away from the houses. Is more, I don't love it, but I do love the land part. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I'm just not really all that interested in walking into somebody else's house that, you know.
Right.
That's in a neighborhood or whatever. Yeah, and just a different niche.
And trying to be an expert on it know, right away, like that just doesn't really
Does your license, like, just take you where you can do that in Nebraska? Or can you go to other states, too?
Just Nebraska. But
it is. Okay.
I am tossing around the idea of getting my license in multiple states.
Okay.
You know, Kansas would be the first one probably because I'm like 40 minutes from the border.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Because in my head, I thought Iowa, but we're just that close too.
Yeah.
And they have tons of hunting ground.
And Iowa's there and Missouri's right there too.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we'll see where this goes.
Okay.
We'll see if there's opportunities. I don't want, you know, it's expensive to hold a license, so you don't want to just get one just to have one and then it doesn't make you any money.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So I'm kind of waiting for that. To, you know, kind of wait to see what happens.
To see what happens. How long have you been doing this? Did you say 4 years or that was with the seed company?
I think, gosh dang it.
Seven?
I think six.
Six?
Okay. I think six.
Okay.
Tell us who you're working with.
Burroughs Tracks Real Estate.
There we go.
The best.
Yeah. Saw their signs a couple times here at the lake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We saw a lot in this mm-hmm. area.
So there are a lot of people like you that just do land, or you are the guru for this company?
For this company, I'm the only one that just only does land for the most part and just focuses on it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess we got an auctioneer down in Pawnee County, Clay Shart. He's a good dude and he's good at his job. He does a lot of land auctions and, you know, land listings and stuff too.
Okay.
So no.
Yeah.
But the majority of, you know, the rest of them.
They'll funnel to you.
Well,
kind of.
No. That's not really the way it works either.
That's true. Like, I guess
you don't give up paychecks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But you can, you know, if you're like me, you can try to just make people aware that, you know, I'm who you want to come to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm going to get it sold at a good price, or I'm going to get it bought for a good price.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm going to find exactly what you're looking for, et cetera. So.
Well, and you put such a focus on it. You've been at the, I think, Nebraska Deer and Game Expo just about every year since it reopened.
I have been there every year in the same corner.
Yep.
Yep.
And I think that's important because Mossy Oak properties are there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of those type of.
Real estate. Big national companies that are just land only. Yeah, there's a lot of competition. So, trying to make a little niche here. You know, I'll go anywhere in the state for sure. I have been. I've been way up north. I've been way out west. But you know, around here, you know, I believe I'm the guy to call. So,
yeah. Well, and I think would you say there's more opportunities around here? You know, 600 acre tracts, things of that nature. Or is it just pretty much everywhere?
Yeah, there's not a lot of large tracks that come up, you know, unless it's a state.
Maybe like 60 acres is more.
Well, sure. You know, basically if somebody calls me up and said, hey, you know, I'm looking for some land. I want hunting ground, but I want income on it too. So it's got to have some ag. So it's got to have cash rent for the crops, or you know, pasture rent or something to pay the taxes and a little more or whatever. Then I get, you know, I find out how many acres you want, what's your budget, et cetera, et cetera. And then I start looking.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to where the co-op is and why I have an advantage in the local area, I guess, is because I know a lot of these farmers. And, you know, if I get I can make phone calls and say, hey, you know, I got guys looking for this and this and this. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about selling it? Because some of these farmers, they consider the hunting ground just waste. It's, I'm paying taxes on it. I'm out making a damn dime. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've put a lot of deals together that way. I think that there's a little advantage to working with the local guy, for sure.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's obvious advantages and parallels there between your work with the co-op and still being a seed dealer.
Yeah,
and then also just having a passion for hunting growing up, fishing and hunting and stuff. Would you say there's any good takeaways from your time in the military that's made you a better real estate broker or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't shy away from competition. You gotta, you know, and it gets a little cutthroat at times, and you got to be willing to cut some throats. You know, that's bottom line. So, yeah, I mean, it's
just kind of the fortitude.
The fortitude, kind of, and yeah, I mean, you got to be tough. You got to be thick-skinned. Yeah. You know, and I just lost out on a huge deal, like a week ago. You know, you can cry in your beer about it or whatever, or you can just move on, and that's what you got to do. So.
I mean, you win some, you lose some, right?
You do.
Yeah.
You actually lose a lot more than you win.
Probably. That's very that
goes,
true.
And so. That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, the upbringing, you know, and the sports and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you lose a lot of games.
You do.
You got to learn how to lose gracefully.
Yes. Right? And us small town boys, we grew up learning how to work hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's a huge factor, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about hunting, not like we're shifting gears or whatever, but like, do you hunt whatever? I mean, just a lot of birds and deer and whatever.
I mostly, you know, I hunt deer. I mean, percentage of time spent hunting is
more deer.
Way more deer than anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love bird hunting. I love, you know, I've been hog hunting. I've hunted, I'd have to think about this.
Getting coyotes yet this year?
Coyotes, yeah. I killed a couple coyotes, but that's from the truck window.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just want them gone.
I count it.
There's goddamn many of them.
We talk about that here.
They're
getting bad out here.
I found three dead fawns behind my house this spring. It just pissed me off. Yeah. You know, it's been a mission ever since. I pretty much from when the crops come out, that's when the gun goes in my truck and it stays there until they're tall enough to, you can't see them anymore.
Yeah, so. Right. And then you fish. Because you and Andy are going fishing.
Fishing is my number one, actually.
Okay.
I love to fish. I will fish every day of my life if I could.
Do you have like a pond on your property or?
No. I love catching crappie and small farm pond stuff. I'm not real big into bass, but I love to walleye fish. I like going down to Kansas, catching wipers, catching white bass and, you know, fishing the river for big cats. You know, I like to.
That's all that.
Walleye's my favorite, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Or yellow perch. You know, they're the delicious. Yeah.
He loves to fish with our son.
Are those perch that are in Beaver Lake, are those yellow perch?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yep.
We've caught a couple of them, but I never really knew what they were.
They're hard to
catch in
that lake. Yeah. They really are.
And we've always caught little ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crappie's kind of the claim to fame, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of crappie.
Yeah. Nice crappie.
But Joel gets a lot of bass, I feel like.
Yeah, he catches a lot of bass.
Yeah, if you're fishing for them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really fish for them. I'm trying to catch stuff I can eat.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
And it's not that you can't eat bass, but I, you know, when the water gets warm, I find them a little mushy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just not.
Not great.
Not my favorite.
Yeah, not flaky like a walleye, that's for sure. Or perch.
So when you guys go fishing today, what would you go for?
Crappie.
Okay.
And perch too.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully.
Yeah, if we stumble across them.
Hopefully.
Joel. I've never been able to catch perch in Beaver Lake. I've probably fished it 10 times, I suppose. So.
When our son has ice fished this year so far, he might just be using a little crappie jig or a little power bait, or sometimes he'll take the wax worms, you know, things like that. But they continually catch bass. They're just coming in and hitting all of it.
Yeah.
They've got to just be starving then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that is?
Not lake. They're not starving. They're just aggressive.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. There's plenty of feed in that lake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Man. And they do you know, they spend a lot of time building habitat and taking care of it. And
they do a really good job. Yeah. Really good job.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fun. Do you think, back to the job thing, because we hear this so often, so I'm curious, do you think that you had any trouble in the transition from the military to civilian jobs?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Actually, that's kind of why I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I kind of job hopped a little bit, you know. Like, you're used to, you know, I guess your superiors in the military, or, you know, your squad leaders and platoon sergeants and all that stuff. You're used to taking orders from them, and then when you get out, it's like, oh God, I don't want to take orders from anybody anymore. And you run into some asshole boss, and you're just like, all right, no, I don't want this stress in my life. So that's how it was for a while with me.
Yeah,
you know, that was a big factor, and that I landed in, you know, where the co-op was great because I loved the people there. It was low stress for the most part, except during busy seasons. You know, then it wasn't, but the people were great. I just got kind of tired of making somebody else millions of dollars.
Yeah,
I'll make myself, you know, some money.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I just find it interesting when you say this, and we've talked about this a lot, like you said, you were okay taking orders in the military from your superiors, but then in the real world...
Well, he might not have been okay with it. He probably got... He was okay, tired
but
with
I'm
it.
Saying yeah. he it was okay with it.
I was okay with it.
But then in the real world, you're not. Like, why does that not translate? Because you're kind of like, F you.
You don't have my back. Talking to me like that.
Type, is that what it is? Like in a real job, they don't really know who you are. They wouldn't die for you. Is that?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I've never really understood, like, why some people would be in your position and take orders from somebody in the military and somewhat be okay with it and then leave and be like, no, you can't tell me.
I don't
okay.
know. That's
I've never asked it either, but it's just something like, you know, I don't know what it is.
And I that's an interesting point for me, and that's what I was going to touch on here, the note I made, because I always thought of it as the other side of that being that the military individual, that's what they're so used to, is being told what to do, you know, X, Y, Z, in this order, 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah. And then when they get into the civilian world, they may not have that kind of direction or that kind of... you know, fallback of like, well, this guy's just going to tell me what to do. I just do what this guy tells me what to do. I don't need to find my own way. So I've thought of it more like that, where you, you know, brought to my attention that, no, it's for you at least. It wasn't so much of that. It was that I was kind of tired of that. And these people that I'm running into now, I don't have a whole lot of respect for.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Respect. It was, you got to, like, earn
the
respect.
It was like the bigger.
Yeah. You got to earn respect, you know, and my squad leaders and sergeants and, you know, platoon sergeants and hell company commanders, everybody, you know, they earn your respect. You know, they prove it day in and day out why they're doing what they're doing, you know. And it was a reserve unit, of course, so most of my people were from Nebraska and Kansas. So they were common folks like me and you.
Yep.
And they were reservists, you know. Which is a huge factor.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, you know, reservists have, you know, they're just on call soldiers. You know, you drill once a month for a weekend, and then you go back to your civilian jobs and you do.
And then
you
if you're called, you're going.
Yep.
I got you. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're, you know, but if you're full regular army, that's what you do every single day. And there's power trips, and there's, you know, just, it's just politics and, you know, the rank structure, the way you can jump rank is not always necessarily earned. It's earned through schooling and stuff, but, you know, total shitbag can be a, you know, sergeant in the army if he does all the NCO, well, what the hell they call it, NCO training and all that stuff.
Like all the things to the...
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure they get their fair share of respect from people, but it's, nah.
Yeah. But so then you had that respect, I guess it sounds like, at the co-op. If you were there for 8 years, you know what I mean? You had these people that you could relate to.
Yeah. No, my mentors at the co-op were, you know, most of them had been doing it for, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, they helped me all the time. You know, you had a question, you called about something certain product or whatever, you called the guy that you knew probably knew all about it.
Okay.
But I had a long list of mentors and people I could call for, you know, for help. And so they earned my respect, I guess, that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it sounds
and
like.
And just not treating me like shit, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some jobs you go to, I was driving a concrete truck, you know, for example, and not going to mention any names or any, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, company names yeah. or anything, but, you know, when your boss is just on a power trip and he's just a real asshole,
mm-hmm.
That's when it's just like, now who are you? Like, mm-hmm. what have you done to earn my respect? Nothing.
Yeah.
You're just treating me like shit for no reason. Like, how about show me what I'm doing wrong and let's learn from it, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. yeah.
Yeah. And there's also a part of that where I feel a coach or a squad leader, sergeant,
yeah.
they're oriented with the details and the outcome they're always thinking of. So they're also thinking of, how do I need to treat this guy to get the best out of him?
Yeah.
And when you get a shithead boss, no, they're not really thinking of that. They're yeah. just like, I'm mad at my wife, or I'm mad at this, I'm mad yeah. at that, I'm going to take it on this guy. And sometimes they don't even know it, but yeah. they're just on their power trip. And I feel like there's a lot of guys or gals out there that have that need to feed their ego or whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. But they come down on people or blame people or give them a bad time. And it's like, if you just take a step back, you're not helping your organization. Yeah. You're definitely not helping them out. And if you want this job done right and correctly and good from here on out, you're not going around it in a very good way.
That's how businesses fail.
Yeah.
You gotta treat your people right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're talking about like those bad bosses and things like that and those kinds of attitudes and behaviors, again, a lot of that goes back to upbringing. You know, that yeah. like that guy or lady's life experience mm-hmm. hasn't been such that it's taught them how to be a team player, how to be a leader, mm-hmm. how to, you know, fill the role that you need to fill at the particular yeah. time, you know, and wear yeah. those different hats and all those kinds of things.
It kind of yeah. reminds me of that saying, you know, the first generation plants the tree, second generation mm-hmm. enjoys yeah. the shade. I feel that's where you get a lot of your bosses and upper middle management. It's the the kids of the business.
They're just like handed a bunch of crap.
Right. Yeah. You're my son or you're my daughter. So now you're in charge of the business or whatever. And
yeah.
here you have workers or people that maybe probably, you know, have just yeah. as much experience or whatever, or more, that are taking orders. And
yeah,
it kind of feeds into itself.
And some people aren't just like me, aren't built to handle that. Like, you know, mm-hmm. treat me with respect, I'll do whatever, you know,
yeah.
I'll work my ass off. But, you know,
I'm
not just going to be compliant and, you know, take that shit.
Right.
That's yeah. basically what it boils down to.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing what we're doing today.
yeah. Good for you.
I worked a corporate job for a while, and that same thing. Just
yeah.
had enough of that shit, man.
Yep. Yep.
When you're sitting there and you're doing stuff that you know you're doing well, but it's never enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's always the next thing. Okay, you did that. Great. Now we're on to this, you know. Mm-hmm. And like you said, just no respect and just the same old shit over and over. You can only do that for so dang long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good thing there are people that can.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Makes the world go around, but I'm not one of those people.
Yeah. Well, and the fact is, it doesn't have to be like that. Like, I mean, right. in all these organizations mm-hmm. that have that kind of culture, it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's on right. on ownership and management to recognize that and fix it.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, you just made me think of a kind of a relevant parallel there. It doesn't have to be that way, and we're in the. Turn it political here, you know. Mm-hmm. We're hearing a lot of deportations and ICE is mm-hmm. coming for you, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of people saying, well, who's going to pick the blueberries? Who's yeah. going to yeah, make yeah. the beds? And you got people like J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, and not that I'm big fans of theirs or anything, but they're like, no, there's plenty of workers out there. You know, there's plenty of workers that would do it. It's just that they demand a certain level of respect, mm-hmm. certain level of pay. They yeah. want you to treat them a certain way. And I don't know why both sides can't just rally behind that. Like, mm-hmm. what are you saying? You're for human trafficking? You're for paying people under the table, taking advantage of them?
Right,
like,
right.
once again, talking about attitudes, take another step there, or take a step back and look at mm-hmm. that. So I think for the most part, like we say, 80%, the majority, you know, yeah, are the common
folk.
The
80-20, yeah.
Yeah, so you're hearing a lot of screaming from this and a lot of screaming back, and I think here we are, the common folk. I think we're slowly taking it back, mm-hmm. you know?
I agree, yeah. Yeah, and it's, I mean, you know, on that topic of you know, these immigrant workers and things like that, I mean, as a whole, as a country, I mean, we should be ashamed of ourselves, man, because the reason that works is because a dollar is worth a whole lot more in Mexico than it's worth here in the United States. So therefore, like, if you look at what you can and can't pay people,
right,
you can pay them a whole less, and it means a whole lot more.
Yeah.
You know, in their home country. You know what I mean? So it's people just taking advantage of that shit is all it is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then it's our own fault that all of our stuff costs so much money that we have to pay our people so much.
Right.
You know, fix the root of the problem, not keep slapping Band-Aids on it and then get mad when people are tearing off the Band-Aids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah.
Once again, treat people with respect. You know, when you just do something simple like that, all these other dominoes start to fall and things start working out.
Yep.
It's like a miracle or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Yeah.
One of the things I remember my dad always said, it was something that happened at a school board meeting up in Lynch, and people were going back and forth and feelings were hurt and got ugly or whatever. And I think it was a superintendent at the time said, you know, you treat people like shit and they're going to treat you like shit. And it's like, well, there you go. Mm. You know.
Boom.
You know, I mean,
pretty simple.
It's the golden rule, right?
Right.
It always comes back to the golden rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do unto others as you would have done unto you.
I mean, yeah.
And pretty simple.
Yeah. And we're talking about all these big obstacles and everything. And like the solution is don't be an asshole.
Yeah. Pretty simple.
Right. Ooh. Right. Shocker. We did it, guys. We figured it out. Andy, thanks for being a guest today.
The problem is people don't think they're being an asshole when they're an asshole. Mm. There's the main problem.
Yeah, that happens. We've all done that.
Yeah.
Andy, do you have any children?
Yes, I have two kids. Yep, they're good kids. Harley, she's 12, and Henry's 8, almost 9. They're...
Oh, man, you have a
so
Henry?
So they fish and hunt with that you then, like a, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son is hardcore fishing. He could fish for 12 hours straight, no doubt.
Really?
Oh, that's great. Yep. That's great.
Yep. And Harley, she's into all kinds of different things, sports and, you know, bunnies and just animals. And
like 4-H rabbits?
Yeah. She likes to hunt, though. And tell you what, cool. She is deadly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got a picture on my phone. She shot her first buck this year, first deer, actually. And there's a long backstory that goes with it, but it was really cool experience for me. But anyways, basically, in a nutshell, we got out of the blind, which we shouldn't have done. We were sitting over my food plot behind my house because somebody had texted and said, hey, we see deer in the cornfields.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't see cornfield from my blind, but right across the tree line 100 yards away is a cornfield. I thought, well, son of a bitch, like maybe we should go over there and take a look.
Yeah, make the play or not. Do we make
and
the play?
My daughter does not like sitting in a blind. She likes to be out in nature, in the stand, no matter how cold it is, whatever. So we get down on the stand, we go up, or we start making our way there, and we get down on the ground, and this is like 20 minutes before dark, and there's a freaking doe right there.
Oh, God.
So I was like, honey, do you want that doe? She was set on a buck, but it was like the last day, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to take that. So we got down in the prone position, and I brought a little bipod that attaches to the, you know, to your front of your gun. So I got her all set up, and I look behind me, and there's a buck right behind us. Like 100 yards away. And I was like, oh, okay, honey, there's a buck right behind us. Would you rather try to take that buck? Yeah. I said, they might run away when we turn around. I'm going to try. So, you know, we're in the prone position. She kind of shuffles around. I just stayed put, and I kind of lifted her gun over her and put it where it needed to be. And I said, aim right for the middle. Right in the middle. And she put that sucker bullet right through the heart, right in the middle of the heart.
Nice.
Yeah, just dropped it. That was really proud.
That is so cool.
Proud dad moment. Yeah. But it was also just a really, really neat experience.
Yeah.
She was just ecstatic, you know.
Is that video of her? I'm shaking. Yeah. I don't know why I'm shaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you wouldn't have got out of the blind, would he have just come right into
it? Yeah. It would have been like chip shot, like 20 yards.
Oh, but see, that's, you need to add the drama. Yeah. That's what makes it so much fun and memorable.
Yeah. But she's been in the deer stand with me like since she was little, you know. Like I'd just take her with me, you know, and we got a two-man ladder stand or something. Just, you want to go with me? And she's really good at like being quiet and moving slow and... You know, like I said, she just really enjoys nature and watching the squirrels and possums walking under your stand, stuff like that. So she wants to be out there anyways. And this year she was old enough to actually shoot. So
That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. She's ahead of you there. No. She's ahead of you.
Yeah, she is by many years.
30.
Yes, exactly.
Or 20, whatever.
But you've tagged two bucks now.
I have.
Three but seasons, $2, I'm pretty good.
43 years old.
Yeah.
Hey. Just a little late to the game, but hey, it's okay. Good. Better late than never.
That's right.
Did what does she shoot? What caliber of rifle?
243.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one I traded a mower for.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like the horse trade. I really like the horse trade. So some guy needed a mower. I had an extra mower. Like, he had a 243, and I said, sure, let's do this. So
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, good.
Yeah, man, that's fun. So what do you see, I guess, for your future? I mean, obviously, you're enjoying the real estate thing right now, doing the seed, working kind of in ag and raising these kids. And
I see myself doing exactly what I'm doing for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... like I said, I've been doing this for a while now, but I've only been doing it full time for like 3 years. And the first year, you know, especially with the seed, you know, you're asking old customers to completely switch seed companies when you just sold them seed for 8 years, telling them it was the best thing ever, which I don't, you know, I'm straight up honest about that. Like the stuff I was selling was damn good corn. But now I'm coming in with something brand new. And trying to tell them, you know, hey, this is the first year. I'm not extremely comfortable with helping you pick hybrids here, but you know, this one is showing up well in the plots. This one is, you know, doing good locally. So let's give this a try, and then, you know, hopefully it does well, and you get the repeat business, and my confidence grows every year.
Good.
Because I'm seeing everything every year now.
And, yeah.
So the seed business is still, you know, miles below where I want to be. But I am confident that I will build every year. And that's kind of the same with the real estate. You know, it was just a, like a side gig when I was full-time co-op. And now that I've, went full-time real estate, it's, you got to build that book of business, you know, and it's, like I said, referrals are, that's the biggest
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, but you got to do a good job for somebody for them to refer you. So, you know, it's it just takes time.
Yeah.
It takes lots of time.
Right.
And word of mouth and, you know, little social media, which I hate.
Yeah, it's tough.
God, I hate it. But got to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so. And I guess I would think what you're doing with real estate would be harder than houses on houses. I don't know. Just because it's more land, it's more cash.
Yeah,
so I would think
inventory
it would.
Yes, for sure, a lot
that's
less.
What I was thinking. So maybe the time would be a little bit longer to build up that book, that resume.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Yep.
Okay, you got to be patient, and like I said, you got to be willing to, you know, just live off nothing sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And luckily, I'm stubborn enough that, you know, I am willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And trade a mower for a gun, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throw all your money at the pay mortgages, you know, months in advance so that you know at least you got a place to live.
Yeah. I mean, it's you being smart is like what it is.
Trying to be.
Really. Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, it's great to meet you. So where could people find you since you are all over social media, you said?
Ugh.
Wink, wink.
Well, you can still find, I'm not all over it, that's for sure, but you can find me on Facebook. That's probably the number one thing. You know, Andy Teis.
Can you spell it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Theis.
Okay.
So you can, you know, ask to join my personal page, or I think it's linked to my real estate page as well, which I try to. I got a gal helping me. She's awesome.
Yeah.
But she helps me with, you know, staying on top of that a little bit. And so sometimes I'll share articles, or we'll just, you know, do little snippets of what's going on, mm-hmm. kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
This will probably be on there, you know, the link.
Good.
Stuff like that. So, yeah, I think my business page is attached. Otherwise, go to Burroughs Tracks Real Estate, you know, on Facebook, and I'm sure you can find me somehow. Or the website, you know, burroughstracks.com, I think, is what it is.
As far as a real estate company, it's still kind of a newer company, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like I said, my broker, he's, like I said, he was one of my best friends growing up. We did a lot of fishing together, a lot, and a lot of drinking together, too. But, you know, I'm sitting here sounding like an alcoholic.
No.
Really, I'm just a freaking small-town kid.
Come on, common folk,
yeah,
right?
Like, exactly.
This is the people that are listening.
But either way, you know, he was working for Nebraska Realty for a while, and then he kind of had that, you know, same mentality that I did, but why am I making all these people so much money? You know, let's make myself some money.
Yeah.
And so he went off and did his own thing, and now we're growing every year. Mm-hmm. It seems to be doing great. We got some damn good agents. Just good people all around. The whole team's just great. So
and where are you guys based out of? Is there like
Elmwood?
Elmwood. Yep. Oh, yep. Okay. Yeah, we know where that is. We play Elmwood a lot.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, Conestoga. Our son goes to school there. So
okay.
Yep, yeah, we'll play, and he shoots trap and
nice.
Elmwood mm-hmm. That's Elmwood Murdoch, right?
Yeah.
Like area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I'm sure you see us a lot around here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see a lot of signs and stuff.
Based out of Cass. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Nice.
So that website is Burroughs Tracks, BurroughsTracts.com. And I see your smiling face on here.
Oh, man, I need to update my profile, that's for sure. The picture's old, but also the bio is like 6 years old.
Yeah.
So the picture does not look old. Like, it looks totally you.
But does it say anything about Harley getting her first buck?
I mean, that's true.
Right, yeah. Well, that's good, I guess. Yeah, I don't look like I'm as old as I am.
Yeah. It's got your email on here, just andy@burroughstracks.com if people wanted to email.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So pretty easy to get a hold of you if you're looking for a land guy, buying or selling.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, well, I got some things going now, too, actually. Got a big old quarter here in Odo County. In Odo County, that's really nice hunting ground. Like, it's exceptional, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Fish and pond on it, and power and water ran to it.
Wow.
And then I got one down that just went live yesterday, actually, in Pawnee County. That's more of it'd be like a blue collar, you know, hunting piece that most people can afford.
Hmm.
I don't think that's going to last very long. 240 asking price, and it's 40 acres of just some fantastic hunting ground.
Nice.
You need to tell Pauly.
There you go.
Yeah. Tell Pauly.
But if he's interested in building, like most people want to build a little cabin on it, you know? And this one, it'd cost so much because it's a quarter mile from the road.
Oh, shoot.
So you'd have to run power a quarter mile. You'd have to, the driveway itself would take a ton of dirt work and money and rock.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm straight up honest with everybody that calls about that one, like, because most people do want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is more just like your own little piece of hunting ground.
Yeah, you go to and you leave.
Unless you got an extra $500,000 laying around, you know.
Yeah, a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Andy.
I know.
Right. Right.
Andy, I think you should buy the one that has all the pond and the electricity.
You should. I kind of like that one.
I'd support that.
Yeah, okay. I would too.
Yeah.
I got a whole bunch of pictures too.
We got a boat you could
pictures
use.
Yeah. There's some nice deer on that one.
Sweet. Well, I'll put together another short video for you for social media like we did.
Cool.
You know, we can do that.
Right on.
Yeah. You know. But yeah, I always.
Hopefully it's sold within the week.
If I ever do that for you, it's always like, well, Jesus, I want that.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. That story of my life. All these hunting properties I walk, I'm like, damn, I wish I could just buy myself.
Yeah.
I bet you see some awesome ones.
Oh, man. I do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks for coming on. This is awesome.
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it, man.
This was fun.
Good getting to know you.
Yeah.
This is real good. Yeah, this is kind of like selfishly. I wanted to get back in touch with Andy. So.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, We did a lot of partying in college, and that's pretty much part of the reason why I joined the Army, and we lost touch, so I'm sorry for that.
No.
We had good times until then.
We did. Yeah, and you didn't tell very many people you were thinking that, because I didn't, I didn't catch wind of it till late.
I just decided one day and went to the recruiter the same day. Yeah. So
that's probably the best way to go about it, because they would have tried to talk you out of it.
Exactly.
Would have had a couple shots served up.
And there was some shit going on at that time. It was all over the news, like bad stuff.
Yeah, your parents were probably like, what the
hell? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They were not impressed.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, but anyways, thanks, guys.
Yeah, man. Great story. Appreciate you coming.
You bet.
Anything else, guys?
Nope.
That's it.
All right, peace. Let's shut it down.
Later.
See ya.